I will tell you, you can't.
Good afternoon, my name is Owen Egan and I am with West Hart. Everybody ready? Good afternoon, my name is Owen Egan and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the commission's regular meeting of May 8th, 2024. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety for the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone. I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Commissioner Barry, Commissioner Einhorn, Commissioner Farish.
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci.
Here.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells. Commissioner Ganswin.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Here.
Mr. Streeter.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, present. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll call. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission regular meeting of April 24th, 2024. Do I hear a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the commission's minutes of the regular meeting for adoption of April 24th, 2024.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish.
Yes.
Commissioner Ganswin.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number FIC 2023-0452, Ian Cook versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, et al. This matter was withdrawn. Is there anyone here on that matter? Anyone here that would like to be heard on that matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, as you mentioned, this was withdrawn and dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Ganswin?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner.
I'm here.
Commissioner Fuzeci, I apologize.
Yes.
Thank you.
I wasn't here last
month. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next is docket number FIC 2023-0241, Anita Araculan versus Chairman, Board of Education, West Hartford Public Schools, et al. I'm actually going to recuse myself on that matter. I don't know if there's anyone here on this matter. There are people here that would like to be heard. So I'm going to recuse myself on that matter. Would you like it to be marked ready?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll mark that ready. All right. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0243, Shapiro Chattery versus Executive Director CT Next et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Yes. Your name, sir?
I'm Shapiro Chattery.
Okay.
And Chris Cahill, shipping a good one on behalf of CT Next and its executive director.
It's attorney Christopher Cahill?
That's right.
Thank you. I'll mark that ready. Thank you, sir. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0244, Yao Campos versus Keith White, Chief Police Department, Town of Monroe, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Yes, would you like to be heard, sir?
Yes.
What's your name? Thank you. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number 2023-0245, Yao Campos versus Chief Police Department, Town of Monroe. Is that the same one we just read? It's another one. There's a second one. Would you like to be heard on that one too, sir?
Yes.
Okay, mark that ready. Next is FIC 2023-0248, Heather Sutter and Bruce McDermott versus Town Manager, Town of Groton, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Yes, sir.
Here for the complainant.
You are.
Edward McCausher.
Thank you, Attorney McCausher. Is there anyone else here on that matter? Yes.
I'm Christy Kelly, the town attorney for the town of Grand, for the respondents, and I wish to be heard also.
Thank you, Attorney Kelly. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0263, Jermaine Rogers versus Office of the City Attorney, City of Bridgeport et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Dean Scalo for the respondents, and I'd like to be heard, please.
Hi, Attorney Scalo. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, we'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0474, Matthew Wagner versus Director, Human Resources Department, Town of Fairfield et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? That was withdrawn and dismissed. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Streeter, they'd reached a settlement, so they withdrawn and it was dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Gansmer?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. And last is FIC 2023-0499, Tim Riley versus Chief Willimantic Police Department, Town of Wyndham et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
On that one, Mr. Chairman, the complainant had asked that the matter be marked off, and so that will come before you at the next commission meeting.
Before we consider these cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Attorney Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements.
Sure. As the chairman indicated, these proceedings are being recorded in their entirety. There's no need to request a recording. We will put the recording on our website soon after the meeting. And if anyone wants access to that and is having trouble, please just contact us and we'll make sure you get it. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral arguments 10 minutes per side. I'll keep track of that for the parties.
So the first one's
okay.
I'm going to leave.
All right. My name is Matt Streeter. I'm the commissioner, and I'll take over in the absence of the chairman. I'll call the first case on the docket, docket FIC 2023-0241, Anita Arkalian versus the chairman, Board of Education, West Hartford Public Schools, et al.
Good afternoon.
Good
afternoon.
You could please identify yourself for the record, Mr. Complainant.
My name is Anita Arkalian. A-R-A-K-E-L-I-A.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Attorney Cynthia Latour on behalf of the respondents. Last name is spelled L-A-U-T-U-R-E.
Okay. I'm sure neither parties, both seem aggrieved here. Would the respondents like to begin, or would you like to defer?
I would defer to them.
Okay. Mr. Palin?
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank the staff and the hearing officers because they issued a subpoena. So I thank you for that. The witness, who is a policy subcommittee member, asked for the subpoena, and they were kind enough to do that, and I did have it served, and it was a learning process for me. I thank the hearing officers for finding that the respondents were in violation of the Open Meetings Act on the provision of for the agenda that the executive session was not in specificity. I would also like to bring to the attention of the commissioners that the respondents did not give the agenda, that it was myself, the complainant, who gave the agenda. Now, very quickly, the briefs
are... Can you just speak up louder? I'm sorry, it can be caught by the microphone.
Should I start from the beginning?
No, you can continue, just nice and loud.
Okay. So having said that, this meeting was decided on April 18th and an invitation was sent out. No notice was ever given to us in the public. And so that's one of the issues that is raised is was it noticed which is to say, was the public apprised of it? So the only notice was the agenda itself. For every other meeting, there is a, let's say, a pattern in which the respondents will give the list of dates, and then the agenda is forthcoming. So we were unaware of this, and I asked around. The respondents during the first hearing did ask me, well, was this a special meeting or a regular meeting? That's not a question that I feel that I, as a complainant, should have to answer. That's a question that the FOIA really gives to the respondents. But that becomes an interesting question because I found out about this May 11th meeting on May 12th when I was looking for the regular meeting. What occurred during the May 11th meeting was to bring a change to the bylaw of the West Hartford Board of Education to the regular meeting, which was on the 16th. Usually that Friday, which is the 12th, is when they'll give the actual agenda items, but we are aware that they will hold the meeting. So let's go, the only thing, so when I filed my complaint, I filed it after the minutes were revealed. I could only file the information and my complaint to the limitation of the meeting minutes because the regular Board of Education meeting was in the evening. As the evidentiary hearing showed, one of the members who is a policy subcommittee member who came under subpoena and testified, everything she testified contradicts what's in the minutes. Everything she testified contradicts, which makes these minutes defective. In addition, I went to the town clerk's office, which was it wasn't per the hearing order, but it was for me to look into it. Town clerk also looked, and he saw that there was no approval of these minutes. So you have defective minutes which were not approved, and one of the policy subcommittee members who was present testified to facts that are in contradiction to the minutes. Now, what needs to be stated is, was this an executive session client-attorney privilege? Executive session allows for client-attorney privilege. What we don't know is who's the client, which is to say the policy subcommittee is, the umbrella is under the West Hartford Board of Education. Board of Education, according to the town charter, is independent of the town. It is a creature of the state. And their bylaw says that they can have their attorneys. They can engage the town corporation council of the town, but they are not the clients of. So that raises the first question of who's the client. The executive session, everything was conducted in the executive session. The purpose of executive session is to limit for information gathering, but that the meeting should be held in open. All voting and to take this matter of the bylaw change to the regular meeting, this vote was done in executive session. That is not allowed by the law. So again, we're looking at defects and violations. Who is the client? Well, the witness, she never engaged the attorney. The other policy subcommittee member who was present, he did not ask to go into executive session for this attorney-client privilege. We don't know whether he engaged or no. What we do know is they did not vote to go into executive session in that matter. The minutes show that Dr. Lorna Thomas-Farquharson was there. No, she wasn't. She was 30 minutes late. She's also, just for the record, she's also a state employee, which means she would have a better understanding of special, of how the FOIA Act is in terms of meetings. And in the department that she works in, they have hearings and they do have meetings. She wasn't even there. She doesn't even come till 30 minutes once it's already started. Again, making the minutes defective. But who is present at this meeting? And they're there the entire executive session. Two representatives from the Office of the Superintendent. The attorney does represent, according to town charter, the superintendent's office, so that is correct. And as I've said, and my complaint is, just because an attorney is in the room doesn't make an executive session. We are not sure. I did ask the policy subcommittee member who was a witness, did the paper, which I found out through the hearing officer's report, did the paper on top say personal and confidential? And according to her recollection, she said she doesn't remember that, which means is the document that they gave for in-camera inspection the same document that the policy subcommittee members, which for the first 30 minutes was only these two members, is that the document that they looked at? Again, leading to the question, who's the client in this attorney-client privilege? So I'm gonna just end it with what I started with. The goal of public agency should be to comply with the FOIA Act and meet all of its requirements. I would state that if you go, and that's how I wrote, or my understanding, in terms of asking the witness questions, I went through the law and I asked point by point. And I, if I'm not mistaken, it's a section, well, I won't even say. There's a section on voting, ensuring that the public knows who voted. This is incorrect. All the different elements of a special meeting, all the different elements of an executive session. With that, I close. Oh, and I ask you to find them in violation of the entire process and to nullify and have them, you know, they can redo it. And at an open meeting, the policy subcommittee member stated, we did this wrong, we should go back and we should do it again. And we should do it correctly this time. With that, I end.
Thank you, Ms. Sarah Kelly.
Thank you. The respondents would respectfully request that the commission adopt the proposed final decision of the hearing officer with respect to this matter. The complainant has raised a couple of issues that I think are outside or exceed the scope of the Freedom of Information Commission, specifically that with respect to who is the client. I would argue that is not within the scope of the Freedom of Information Commission, so I'm not even going to speak on that specific issue that the complainant has raised. With respect, the complainant also references the minutes of the policy subcommittee meeting, West Hartford Board of Education policy subcommittee meeting, quite a bit. I would state to that that at no point in the course of the complainant's original complaint did she actually ever mention that there was an issue with the minutes as presented by the respondents during the two hearings. What was an issue was, as alleged by the complainant, was whether the agenda for the West Hartford Board of Education Policy Subcommittee was properly noticed. As specified in the proposed final decision, as presented by the evidence and testimony, at the time the law was that the agenda had to be posted at least 24 hours with the town clerk's office. That was in fact the case with respect to this specific agenda. It was even posted on the town, West Hartford Public Schools website at least 24 hours in advance. And so with that, unless there's any other questions, I would just ask that the commission adopt the proposed final decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the commissioners?
I'm the hearing officer. If anybody wants to hear from me, it's up to you folks.
Are there any questions of the hearing officer? Okay, well, if there's nothing further, I guess, did you have a question? I just want to make sure. Didn't want anybody to miss out.
Excuse me, just one thing, I'm sorry. I just wanted to thank Attorney Mary Kate Smith for all of her assistance on this. And, you know, it was kind of you read this, it was a torturous procedural path. And, you know, Attorney Smith, you know, search for what the complainant was alleging, you know, that's the law for that is at paragraph 6 and 7. And the path that she took was footnotes 1 through 6. And the case was much like a broken vase on a floor, looking at each shard, which is what she did. And I thank her very much for all of that. And that's all I have to say.
Is there any further comment from the complainant?
Yes, what I want to say is until the witness didn't testify, I could not bring up the problems with the minutes. It was her testimony that allowed for me to find that the minutes were defective. Because right around this entire time, there were two deaths on school properties, and there were lawsuits being filed. And that's why she was very hesitant to speak, and that's why she asked for that subpoena. Again, I feel that I had asked the chairwoman questions the day before. Had she answered, I could have filed a better complaint, but since she didn't, and then obviously after the witness testified, I found out why she couldn't answer. She wasn't even there at the beginning. She couldn't answer to a lot of those questions. So I think the law says if there's enough conflict, what's the overarching principle? The overarching principle is open meetings, and the people need to be apprised of what's going on.
This is Commissioner Hackett, just in response, I think Attorney Latour was on point with her comments about many things that were outside the scope of the complaint. And, you know, we searched the complaint and several emails with a fine-tooth comb to come up with two additional ones. One was the sufficiency of notice on the executive session. The second was, you know, was the executive session conducted for a proper purpose? And, you know, it was this matter was continued to at least twice to give the complainant her due process, or what we believe her due process. And we granted a subpoena. I think this is only the second time in the history of the Freedom of Information Commission that a pro se was granted it. So we did everything we could. And, you know, to go things that are outside the scope, things that are gathered up during the course is like, you know, procedural whack-a-mole. And it's not done. You go with it, with what's been alleged, or what we think has been alleged. And that's all I have.
All right, thank you. Is there a motion?
No. I move that the commission adopt the hearing officer's report. Commissioner Farish.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Is there any further comment from the commissioners? Not seeing anyone, I'll take the roll call vote. Mr. Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Pizzeschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Gadsman?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
And myself, Commissioner Streeter, votes yes. The matter passes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you to the President. Thank you, Attorney Lister. We will now, before I do the next case, we'll have the chairman come back in. Thank you, Russ.
You're not going to leave not like you do me, huh?
So as we're waiting, the next case will be FIC 2023-0243, Mr. Sapero Chatterjee.
Yes.
And I think it's Attorney Christopher Cahill. Why don't you come on up and we'll just wait until the chairman gets here. Yes. Next one, yes. Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'll call again docket number FIC 2023-0243, Sapero Chattery versus Executive Director, Connecticut Next, et al. And parties are here. Could you identify yourself? You can stay seated. Thank you for rising.
So, Sapero Chattery, I'm the complainant.
Thank you.
Chris Cahill, Shipman and Goodwin, on behalf of the respondents.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chattery, would you like to begin?
Sorry, I brought in 14 copies as instructed. Just a brief to some points of clarification.
Okay,
Yes, we did.
Is it 4 points?
Yes.
Yeah.
3 points.
Yeah.
3 points. It's one page, sir, right?
Yes.
Yes, we have it. Thank you.
And I'll go over that in due course. I'm not an attorney by any means, but my research and also talking to various agencies and other people in economic development and higher ed, this is, I believe, quite an unprecedented case. Because for a number of reasons, one is getting to the brass tacks, the FOIX exemption that's been given to state agencies as well as quasi-state agencies like CTNext, or rather the parent of CTNext, Connecticut Innovations, they also enjoy, have the prerogative. But what has happened in this case is it is sandwiched, that exemption is sandwiched between two federal bodies of federal statutes. One with the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, in dealing with equity and financial transactions. And the second side of the sandwich is the Department of Education, the higher ed. I've had meetings with them a while ago regarding Title VI and Title IX. Now the reason, I'll start with the higher ed portion, which is where it started. The program Innovation Places Hartford, later they started doing business as Launch Hartford, was basically run by staff members by the higher education establishments at UConn, Trinity College, Goodwin College, and University of Hartford. And they are, by federal statutes, obligated for Title VI, Title IX in their participation in programs. So that's one side. Now, the other side is the program itself was allocated public funds meant for Connecticut businesses, Connecticut small businesses, specifically in the Hartford area. But there were also similar programs in New London, in Stamford, as well as New Haven. But this particular one was based around the Hartford area. Hence, Innovation Places Hartford, DBA, as Launch Hartford. Now, Connecticut Innovations and subsidiary Connecticut CTNext are venture capital firms that invest in startup companies, growth companies that have SEC statutes, that are governed by SEC statutes, and they, more importantly, there are fiduciary obligations to it. So if Connecticut Innovations makes recommendations of investments and so on, they are investment advisors. It should be, you know, it's under the graces of their fiduciary, or should be under the graces of fiduciary obligations. But what has happened is, since 2017, from the commencement of the program, right up to about 2023, there were no public meetings whatsoever. I mean, zero public meetings. No meeting agendas, no meeting minutes, nothing. It was only on requests of FOIA and so on that those meetings were made available. And some other, and quite a few other documents, some of them relevant. Most, I would say, were not. But the bottom line is public funds were given to this program, and we quite simply, even right up to today, about $4.4 million of public funds remain unaccounted for. And an additional, there were about $2 to $3 million from private sources, being corporations, local companies that also participated in this program. That being said, the public fund side, we do not know. So the money came in we do not know where, how it was distributed, who received it. And in my review and in my summary brief, I looked at it. I looked at everything from newspaper clippings to some documents I received through FOIA and also through UConn itself, and also social media, Twitter, and so on from some other participants. What I find is that who received the money and how much is still not accounted for, irrespective of how much documents they send over. I think it was some, well over 900, probably close to 1,000 documents. But the relevancy is very important. But the chief reason has been, and it is being distilled down to the FOIA exemption. So CICT Next, UConn, and all can receive public funds and they can distribute it, but we do not know where the money went. And what I found is there were about four vendors, all out of state, that were selected for the distribution of the programs. And there were close to 80 small businesses that received the benefit of these program. There's about $4 to $6 million. Of which, of the 80, about all of them were out of state, 31 were from foreign countries, 11 countries. So, but we do not know precisely the dollar amount, we do not know precisely the name of the company itself. So, but now what I see is with the FOIA exemption, that information, who the vendors were, how much they received, the funds, how the public funds were distributed, and the 80 foreign and out-of-state companies and the amount of benefits they received have been clamped down because of the FOIA exemption. And the FOIA exemption basically says under the statute they've given, let me get it here. The documents will have contained trade secrets, intellectual property, patents, scoring or ranking of how we selected the 80 businesses, critiques, and so on. And these are all exempt from FOIA. So, but my point is, I'm more interested in how many dollars you got, who you are, and how many dollars you got. And I still, right now, do not know that. What I know is what I've dug up myself, looking at social media, FOIA request, Hartford Current, Hartford Business Journal, and so on. No official document whatsoever was received from my FOIA request to see Connecticut Innovation CX. So this is a, there are twofold out here. And as I was trying to explain in my conversation with the Department of Education, UConn, which spearheaded the management of this program, is still bound by Title VI, Title IX. And I do not see that the results, what I see through my own investigation is that you have 80 companies they're welcome to come here, stay here, and you know, participate in our programs, but they were literally selected from two continents away. So I thought there was a Title VI, Title IX violation there. And then from the SEC portion, because the CIC, the Connecticut Innovation, the parent company CityNext, they have statutory obligations of job creation, return of investments, and attracting investment capital to the state, attracting capital. So these 80 companies, by the way, they all left town before COVID arrived, at least almost all did. Since I didn't have access to any public, they didn't have public meetings or public agendas and so on, meeting minutes. These are my estimates that I backed up as much as I possibly could in my briefs. But they did not create any jobs. There was no return on investments. And we do not know how much investment capital they attracted because they're not here at all. Actually, they came here for about 3-4 months and they left soon after. So my point being is that this information, we know it happened, I've gathered it, and it is also, but Connecticut Innovation is still continuing with this program. I do not believe that this is in violation of the fiduciary obligations. if they know a particular program is not performing, a particular procedure is not performing, why should they continue to take public funds and go through the same route? So that's the SEC portion, the fiduciary obligation of Connecticut University is seriously endowed here. And from the Title VI Title IX, I mean, that's a dead stop. And in my conversations, as I recall, with the Department of Education, the Office of Civil Rights, they literally, I think they viewed it as unprecedented too, that you had a state law, UConn and other education establishments that are bound by Title VI Title IX, participate in other programs that overlap. So I've come down to the point to distill it. I'm grateful for receiving probably 800, 900, 1,000 documents that the relevancy is still doubt. The FOIA exemption is claimed on commercial or financial information given in confidence, not acquired by statute, intellectual property, patents, score ranking, critiques, and so on. For this moment in time, for this case, I think it would be the bottom line is to really know where did those public funds go, the $4.4 million and plus another $2 million, so between $4-6 million, and who received them, which vendors and how many received them, who were the 80 businesses that came to town, consumed millions of dollars, and left town. I don't believe with the governance of the SEC fiduciary obligations and with the Title VI, Title IX obligations, I don't think that information should have exemption. If they still feel, yes, that document contains patents and commercial and personal information and scoring and ranking, by all means, redact it. Redact it. I do not want to know your score. I just want to know who you are and how many dollars you received in public funds. So I don't believe the argument they've made for exemption for FOIA, everything from trade secrets and commercial or financial information given in confidence, should be applicable here. I don't want to know how many dollars came in precisely and who received them, either vendors and the other state and foreign businesses. Going back to the 3 points.
Jesse, you're at 11 minutes at this point.
Oh, so okay. If I may close. If I may.
Chairman, yes.
Please.
If I may, the 3 points that are elaborated here, this is from the proposed final decision document. The overall program, Innovation Places Hartford, to launch Hartford, they have small sub-programs, and each of them are finely divided into statement of works. So the statement of work, when it starts, ex ante, tells, okay, we gave so many dollars and so on. But it gets reconciled at the end, ex post, as to what they did with the dollars. I've never received any reconciled documents, and I believe they've claimed that as an exemption, FOIA exemption. So that is problematic. That's item one. Item two is the, as I mentioned, federal statute, the SEC and the civil rights statutes, Title VI is applicable here. Since all these colleges were direct participants, they were also decision makers in the process. And last, the third thing I must reiterate about the FOIA exemption, including the 46 documents that were given for camera inspection. Once again, if those documents contain what happened to the public funds and who received them, benefited from them, that'd be fine. Scoring, ranking, patents, and so on, for this moment in time, they can redact it. Simple as that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The proposed decision and our position is that it's comprehensive, thorough, thoughtful, and should be adopted. I can speak to the 3 points in the May 7th brief briefly if it's helpful, although bear with me because it does get kind of confusing, and I get confused myself a little bit, but I think I have a good handle on things. So the main point we would say is that paragraph 2 of the proposed decision contains the FOIA requested issue here. There's two parts to it. One was these innovation the launch Hartford meeting minutes and agendas. And then the second was actual and complete financial statements submitted for these two accelerator programs. So those are the two things, the meeting minutes and agendas, and then the actual and completed financial statements. So for the meeting minutes, the first part, I think that's what point one is speaking to. And so the law here that we argued down below with the hearing officer is that the request has to be specific enough so the agency knows what to do, to know what to go look for. And there were three hearings during this process. And in the first one, the primary issue was that the agency conducted a search for the minutes. We provided them. And then the main issue was that the agendas and minutes contain references to Dropbox where there's more documents, and they also contain references to documents. And the issue was, well, that should come within the scope of the request for the meeting minutes and agendas. We took the position it shouldn't. The hearing officer did order CT Next to go then look for that stuff to see if it existed, if we had it. That is in the record, in the proposed decision at 43 and 44. And that's where we found the 800 some odd documents, and we just voluntarily gave them. And we did withhold 40, which I'll get to in a minute. But that's what that was. So now when we look at issue one, the problem is when the request constantly kind of changes, the agency doesn't have a fair chance to go do it in the first place. And so respectfully, we think with this issue one, they're changing. Mr. Chatterjee is changing the request to say, okay, it's not the Hartford launch meeting minutes and agendas and records I want, it's these other things. And the hearing officer found, it's in what, paragraph 34, 35, and 36, that's really outside the scope of the original request. And we think that's correct, and that should be. That resolves the first one. The second one, quickly, this has come up a lot. It was confusing, the idea of SEC, federal statutes, civil rights statutes, all these other statutes. We just think it doesn't seem to relate to FOIA as far as we could tell. You know, the issue is, do we have documents? Did you request them? Do we search and provide them? Or is there an exemption? It doesn't seem to be that. There is a footnote in the proposed decision, footnote 10, where I think the hearing officer addressed this. The thinking was, well, maybe those statutes somehow relate to whether an agency has an obligation under FOIA to produce certain records, but it really simply is unclear. We can't figure out what the issue is. And it just doesn't seem to relate to FOIA. And then the third one, this one's the most kind of tricky and complicated because there's a mixing and a blending, I think. So the 47 documents that we claimed an exemption for, those were the documents referenced in the meeting minutes that we said was outside the scope of the original request. And ultimately, the hearing officer did agree with us and found that. I think it's at paragraph 39, right? Oh, I'm sorry. No. That's at paragraph, oh boy. Forty-nine. So the hearing officer says, okay, these documents referenced in the meeting minutes and agendas are really outside the scope of your original request. So the agency complied. But anyway, she then went on to, because we did claim, if you find that they're within the scope of that meeting minutes and agenda request, we're going to say an exemption applies. And so she went on to decide that. And what those documents are, they're not financial statements. That's where the mixing and blending kind of comes in. What they are is the scoring, then the proposals that people that were looking for financial assistance submitted. They had like budgets and some financial stuff there. And so the hearing officer found, again, that those documents weren't even requested in the first place. We gave a ton voluntarily, but we did hold back the 47 or 49. And she said that the exemption under 32244A that Connecticut Innovations enjoys, but that also applies to CT Next as its subsidiary, you know, would apply to those documents anyway. So I think insofar as he's talking about the 47 documents, that's, I think, the right outcome. They weren't requested, and even if they were, the exemption applies because they were provided by people to Launch Hartford and then provided to the agency for financial assistance, and they fall within the scope of the statute, marketing plans, business plans, you know, all these other things, financial statements, sales and earning forecasts, strategic plans, that kind of stuff. And the hearing officer found that if they wasn't protected, that would really chill the program and be an impediment to the program. So that's the 47 documents. But then the reason it gets a little confusing is because then he's mentioning the financial statements, which is the second part of his original request. In paragraph 2 of the proposed order were the actual and complete financial statements. And on that one, the way the proposed order talks about it, which we think is correct, is if you look at paragraph 5 and 9, essentially what you see is the agency did conduct a search. It's a little vague. The request is a little vague, but they did conduct a search and provided a bunch of documents that best met the request. I mean, just look at paragraph 9. They, you know, the respondent, that's the agency, was saying, well, we don't there is no 27 one, but here's the 2018, 2019, and 2020 audits and some other information. I think quarterly reports, he's saying they're not yet available. There's a reconciliation, which hasn't yet been done yet. So the agency is certainly doing a search, providing the documents. And what the hearing officer observed in paragraphs, that's paragraph 39 and 40, is the law is really only... You know, the only obligation on the agency is to provide documents that exist at the time of the request, because otherwise then the agency just has this ongoing, continually forever obligation to produce documents. And so we do think that's right. And so again, it's a really thorough, comprehensive, thoughtful proposed decision. We had three hearings. We tried really hard to do the right thing and comply with the law. And so we would urge it to be adopted.
Attorney Cahill, Mr. Chatterjee had asked about where did the funds go. Is it your position that his request, which is set forth in paragraph 2, did not ask for documents demonstrating where the funds went?
No, I'm not. So it's a little hard. The substance of the claims are a little bit hard for me. I think paragraph 9, these audits, probably answer that question. But, you know, that's something I really was just focused on. What did you request? Do we conduct a search for it? Do we give you what best match your request or exactly match your request or, you know, the best we could to figure out what you're asking? And if we did that, then I felt that was kind of that's the job. That's
so you think these audits that were produced and they're referenced in paragraph 9 would answer his question?
I think so, but I want to just be clear. I don't, you know, the substance of the claims and stuff would never, that's not something I've ever.
So I guess I'll simplify it. If he asked in a separate request, may I have all documents that show where the funds went, you would provide him or your client would provide him that which is set forth in paragraph 9.
Yeah, I suspect that the reconciliations might answer that question is what I'm thinking. And if they exist now, then of course, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions?
No, I have the same question, so thank you.
Yeah.
Just Commissioner Hankins.
Commissioner Hankins.
Yeah, so, Attorney Cahill, the complainant was provided with several hundred pages of responsive documents?
Oh, yeah, up to like 1,000 documents, pages-wise even, way more. So, yes.
Okay. Could you respond to what he just said? I'm struggling with this. See, just a simple question of public agency gave money to people, forget all these finances, and you're trying to see who received how much, and forget de minimis. That information you have not received, your claim?
That is correct.
And but that's where I get lost.
Me too, as well, because it's...
I mean, how to resolve that, those two points.
Correct.
Hold on one second. Mr. Chatterjee, please. I think Commissioner Fuzeci is asking you a question.
Yeah. The statement of work, there are about 50 statement of work, which starts by saying X amount of dollars will go towards these various sub-programs, projects, initiatives. That's ex ante, that's before the fact. So then they do go out there and spend the money. And then it is reconciled. What is it you do with the money? And there are statutes for that too. That reconciliation will tell me, or anybody else in the state, what is it they did with the money? Some of them are outlandish. $300,000 was spent for a website.
That's right. Okay. I thought you were trying to find that map. not how it was used by the recipient. I'm trying to distinguish between amount received, yeah, or awarded at least, yeah, separated from how it was used, who used
no,
it.
No, well, the,
that those two concepts
okay,
seem to the, merge, but they're different in my mind.
Yes, so the Reconciliation Act will tell the reader of the reconciliated statement of work the amount, how much you spent, and if there's anything left over, here it is back, and they could return if the amount. If you allocated $1 million, but you spent only $900,000, you reconcile your document, the statement of work, and you also give back the $100,000. The reconciliation part, it appears right now on 50 of them, so seems to be under the cloak of the FOIA exemption. And it, when you go through the reconciliation, you also realize how it was spent.
I understand. That's a separate problem.
Yeah.
So I understand the principle that if I give you $100 to spend and you only spend 90, I got 10, I get 10 back. I understand that reconciliation. I'm not quite clear why to answer that question that way. You were granted 90, you received 80, because why you have to go into the underlying analysis. That's what I get. To get those two pieces of information. Separate, you seem to be talking, and I understand, there probably is some document somewhere about reconciliation, but that I think would fall under different exemptions. I'm just trying to narrow the if they had only one, they had only made one grant, $1 million to XYZ high-tech company. And at the end, XYZ high-tech only received $900,000. You don't have documents that can make that reconciliation?
No, sir, I don't. Because the reconciliation document would, a reconciled statement of work would say what was spent and what's left over. And they also have to describe, because in your original statement of work, you have to describe what is it you plan to do with the money. And so when you reconcile the document.
Yeah, I understand that. I just understand. I give you $1 million. There's I give you $1 million. At the end, I only give you 900,000 because of you didn't do the job. All that I think is pretty confident. Why?
Yeah.
But that's why I'm struggling with. But you've answered it to your, I understand what you're saying, but for me, it's not answered my question yet.
You said it's $4.4 million in reality, approximately $4.4 million that remain unaccounted for.
Unexplained.
Unexplained.
The difference.
It's Joseph's. I'll take it back.
Unexplained to your assessment.
Unexplained. So there was statement of work to the effect of approximately $4.4 million. We do not know what's happened. What I could gather outside is that it went to out-of-state vendors and out-of-state and foreign businesses, and not Connecticut businesses.
Okay, I'm taking too much. I assume there's some other doc that if there was $400,000 left hypothetically in the budget, and it was either spent or not spent. If it was spent, there'd be another list that said somebody got $100,000, somebody had it's a different year, maybe different, but that narrow fact has got to exist.
So, Attorney Cahill had
also. If you want, I'd love to have an answer because it solves a lot of issues for me, very simply.
Yeah, so in terms of the claims that this money is this or that or whatever, I just. But what I think is if you look at paragraph 9, you see the agency basically receiving requests for actual and complete financial statements, and I think they're trying to provide the information that would answer these questions, whatever the issue is and whatever the answer is. And so they're giving the audits. I mean, I assume that's maybe where you get the answer from, I think. And then they're talking about these quarterly reports and reconciliations. They just didn't exist yet at the time of the request. And then the problem is, I mean, it's a very long decision. We go off on all these other roads. So we spend all our time doing all these other things. And so that's why it's really important to specify, like specific enough, what you want us, the agency, to get, and we'll go get it and give it to you. And it's just more simply, rather than, and that's why we want to kind of uphold this principle that whatever you need, just be clear about it and just tell us and we'll go get it and give it to you. And I think he wants the reconciliations, in which case we'll,
What he did ask for were actual and complete financial statements submitted by Innovation places, Hartford/Launch Hartford.
Right. Yes, it was, there's a lot of ways to read that, but I guess the way they read it was this issue of audits and reconciliation and trying to answer that question. So that's what they provided in 9, insofar as it existed at the time.
And in 9, it said that the last paragraph says, per the above, we still owe you 2021 and 2022 audits, Q3 through 23, quarterly and a reconciliation of the Hartford Alliance SOW. What does SOW stand for?
Statement of Work.
Statement of Work. Were those provided?
There were, I believe, but just there were some.
There were 50 of them ex ante before the work started, but none received, none reconciled.
It's again that same issue that we give what we have at the time, but what he's saying there is, I per the above, these are the things that don't exist yet. I owe you. So the agency thought at the time that even though they didn't exist, we're still going to give them. And that's a good thing, I think.
Is the agency still in the process of giving these documents?
The thing is, there's been a lot of turnover in the agency as well. So, but if a request comes in, we would comply with the law.
Okay, but it says here you're going to continue to do it.
Except that the decision says that they're not required to give out documents that didn't exist at the time.
Right.
They just want an answer to my question. Are you continuing to give those documents?
Not at this exact moment. I guess there's no
effort.
So
you stopped?
Yeah, we stopped. We're done. Right.
Okay,
thank you. If requests come in, of course, we'll always comply with the law.
Thank you. Hold on a second.
The thing about the reconciled document, which is really at the heart of the matter, what was done with the money and how. These go back to 2017, where this thing is in 2023. So, and they should be, and according to the statute and rules, they were supposed to reconcile within 30 days after the statement of work is completed. So out of the 50, I would say the bulk of it were reconciled and should have made available. So out of the 50, I haven't received any of them. And these are, some of this literally goes back to 2017. That's when the program started.
I just point out the request is from 2019 to 2022. So going, again, this is where things always change and it's very difficult to get to the end.
Thank you. Any of the other commissioners have any questions?
Commissioner Street, that was my only point I was going to mention, which I interject on you, was the fact that this was a request that was beyond the scope and the time, and that there was no requirement to basically move the goalposts for this request. But I just wanted to clarify that. I did want to speak earlier, but no.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further? Great. And entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish.
Yes.
Commissioner Fuseschi.
Yes.
Commissioner Gansler.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, I'm eating yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you both very much.
What is the gentleman, sir?
Everyone voted in favor. Passes unanimously. We voted in favor of the decision, as is.
Is there an appeal process?
There is an appeal process. You'll have to investigate that.
All right, yeah. Sir. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right.
Chairman, you
want
to note my attendance?
Yes. I think you came when I wasn't here, right?
When I was
here. Just a little after I came back on that. So, yes, we'll note the attendance of Commissioner Goolsbee Wells, who came and attended this entire hearing, this past hearing.
Did you wish to cast your vote for the minutes?
The minutes, I'll vote in favor.
And any of the other matters that were adopted? Mr. Cook's
was adopted.
Mr. White.
Did we have other arguments?
There was no arguments.
No, other than the this
one. There was argument on this one.
I will abstain from that one, but I will vote in favor of FIC
2023-0452.
Can you just hold it on that one?
This one didn't call me, so that's why I said what I said. Just get my name.
Ms. Chatterd.
Yes, so for FIC 2023-0243, I vote in favor.
And then this was, I believe, withdrawn.
Okay, I also vote on FIC 2023-0474. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have FIC 2023-0244, Yao Campos versus Keith White, Chief Police Department, Town of Monroe. Is there anyone here from the Town of Monroe? So Mr. Campos, there's two matters together. Can these be combined? Or
yes.
Would you like, if you'd like them combined?
Yes.
Do we need a motion to consolidate those? Or?
I don't think so. I think you can just state that. I mean, let me see if the hearing officer sees any issues with that.
So just for the record, Kevin Mono, the hearing officer. I don't see any issues, just so the commission is aware. The outcome is different in both cases, so to the extent that might confuse things. But I think
we should take them one at a time. Yeah, please. So I'm sorry. We'll take them one at a time. So again, this is docket number FIC 2023-0244, Dow Campos versus Keith White, Chief Police Department, Town of Monroe.
So I requested some through Freedom of Information Act, some reports that span about a three-month period. I was provided with the documents, which were incomplete, approximately a month and a half later. I pleaded with the police department for the missing documents. They said they would look at it, return, get back to me, and no response. This went on for about a period of a year. I would like to thank the commission personnel for helping me obtain most of the records. Throughout this time period, the only time records would be provided, they essentially provided me a packet at the beginning, and most of them were not part of the information requested time frame, just other information. So I re-clarified that I was missing information, police provided, and no answer. We met in this hearing, and every time we came to a hearing here, they would bring information, extra information that wasn't provided before. So they had all this time frame to provide me the information, withheld it, no reason why, and they would come to the commission, here, we found this, we found that. And there seems to be a pattern with the Monroe Police Department of, we gave you the information requested, we come to a hearing a year later, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And, oh, we found this after we searched it again. And, oh, we found that the next time around. We come to a hearing. Well, this is still missing. Well, we believe we gave you everything. But we'll go back and look at it. They go back and look at it. Oh, we found something else. Here you go. And it's just a pattern. So the 244 was a span of 3 months. So through my subsequent request of information, I started narrowing the time frame to either a specific report or a very specific time frame to try to get the information as soon as possible. So the timeliness of it, in the responsiveness of it is excessive, I feel. Not only that, the department's chief got involved because of the request that I made, and he delegates those document searches, which is usually done through the records department, through other people, such as some of the lieutenants, which I've had problems with a multitude of people. So every time I go, and I was just in court just the other day, and a random police officer from the Monroe Police Department was very familiar with my Freedom of Information Request Acts, even though this person was not involved in any of it, right? So it seems that it's a small town, right? Monroe is a fairly small town for Connecticut.
they seem to target my name and they seem to withheld some information that I asked for. And they seem to postpone providing that information as long as they can until they come to the commission here and they start divulging some of it. To this day, there's still some information that I did not receive that they said that was destroyed or because of the time frame. Because they said we retain some records for 90 days, the cameras get overwritten, and just excuse after excuse. And that seems to be the excuse as we go on. So they claim that I arrest them because I want some of my records, and they're taking that as harassment of the police department, which is just not true. It's just a false statement. I'm just trying to get the information. So that's the gist of the 0244. It took way too long to get these records.
Thank you. Any questions for any of the commissioners? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion?
The number that we're first on.
So 0244?
Right. Any discussion? All right, hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Gansman?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Campos. All right, so we'll move on now, Mr. Campos, to the second matter, docket number FIC 2023-0245, Al Campos versus Chief Police Department, Town of Monroe et al. And then this one, you were successful, Mr. Campos, correct?
Correct.
And you'd like to be heard?
I would.
Okay, go ahead.
So again, this is, as I've stated earlier, I try narrowing the time frame to a shorter time frame. In this case, it's approximately 2 to 3 week time frame of records. And I requested the records within a week following it. So nothing was purged, nothing was destroyed. All the records should be available per their public policies. Not all records were provided. Some records they said they couldn't find. So I questioned the integrity of the chief's investigation of what happened to the records. And again, the timeliness of it. The hearing officer did find they violated the provision of statute 1210-A and 1212-A of the general statute. And I'm not quite sure that they're still in violation of the property of that provision, because I do have other requests that are taken again 1 year, no reply, no follow up, until we come to the hearing. They start providing pieces of it, and I have to say, no, it's not all there. We have to reschedule the hearing and just waste time, waste the commission's time, valuable time, waste my time, waste their time. And at the end of the day, at the end of the cycle, it goes through, and they're like, well, we just can't find anything, or it got purged because of the time frame deadlines, the 90-day policy, and so forth. So I'm hoping that they do act promptly, so we can stop violating the timeliness provision of the statute.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Campbell?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Farish.
Sorry about my call. Could I ask Attorney Munn if he contemplated a civil penalty in this case? If so, why not?
For the record, Kevin Munn, again, I was the hearing officer in this matter. Mr. Farish, I did consider the civil penalty. I thought, given really the factors that I think were the deciding factors in this case were the number of requests Mr. Campos has made, the efforts, I think if the department initially, I think, was not treating the request with the seriousness that it should have. But the chief did, as in the decision, at some point in the fall, get involved and did make what I thought went above and beyond to kind of wrangle everyone to put the resources in to comply with the request. So I thought that, you know, given the number of requests that Mr. Campos submitted, the number of appeals that the department has to work on and simultaneously with complying with this request, and the fact that the department was kind of turning the tide and making the efforts, I thought that those factors, you know, weighing everything together to me weighed against imposing a civil penalty. So that was what decided for me in this case.
Okay, thanks for explaining your thinking.
May I add something to that?
Thank you. Sure.
So at that point,
Mr. Campos,
Mr. Munn was, the hearing that Mr. Munn held was one of the first FOIA appeals that I made, right? Just on, I believe, Monday, I was here of this week on another FOIA request with the department. And again, for waiting months and months for the information that they claimed they provided everything to me. Yet they show up on this hearing and they're like, yeah, we have some more information for you. So the fact that about a year ago, the chief was stated that he had the resources and that he had people pay attention to provide me the information required, still hasn't taken effect. Yeah, I come here almost a year later and they're still not providing me the information, and they come to the hearing where here we found some more information, and I'm like, okay, and I still don't know if that's all the information that I have until I review it. It's just that cycle keeps repeating itself, which is why I keep asking for the civil penalty to be applied so that they take these matters seriously.
Thank you. Commissioner
Streeter. So to Mr. Campos' point, obviously, we haven't had a lot of Matt's cases that have come here with that we've ruled against them, but as you're...
Monroe.
I don't mean to come... mix up the two towns. Sorry about Monroe, but as you mentioned, if you know these cases continue in the future, we will consider.
To be quite honest with you, I don't think they've ever received a FOIA request. It's just as simple as that, right?
Well, as far as you, they've never received a civil penalty.
A civil penalty, or a request of records through. Maybe they have.
At least in the last 12 years that I've been on the commission, I haven't seen it.
You've never seen them here,
but
right?
if you keep coming back, and you know, we will weigh that more,
yes,
you know, on the scale in the future. I just want to let you know that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the other commissioners have any comments or questions? I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fusesci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Ganswin?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Olenegan, yes. Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Campos. Next, we have docket number FIC 2023-248, Heather Sutter and Bruce McDermott versus Town Manager, Town of Groton, et al. Let's go forward.
Okay. Is Mr. McDermott one of the complainants?
Thank you. Hi, Mr. McDermott.
Thank you.
Hi.
Member of the Council representing the complainants.
Hi, I'm Christy Kelly. I'm the town attorney for the town of Groton, representing the respondent.
Would you like to begin, Attorney?
Sure. Good afternoon. I'm Christy Kelly from the law firm of Sussman Shapiro. I'm the town attorney for the town of Groton, and I'm here on behalf of the respondents, the town manager, town of Groton, and the town of Groton. The respondents respectfully object to the proposed finding and decision prepared by the hearing officer in this case on several grounds, and we request that the commission decline to adopt the proposed finding and decision as it exists. The respondents assert that the proposed decision contains several erroneous findings of fact and arbitrarily mischaracterizes the written records request in dispute in this matter in a manner that's prejudicial to the respondents, and it did so after the fact, it certainly wasn't a request that it morphed the request over time. The proposed decision also misapplies longstanding legal precedent in holding that the respondents reading of the complaint as written was overly formal and legalistic and unrealistic. This request was crafted by a reputable, well-experienced legal practitioner with decades of experience, and it was in fact a quite specific request. The request itself, which was in writing, so we had the benefit of having a written request, stated that they were seeking copies of any and all written documents prepared by the town attorney for the town for Groton, and separately, comma, by the town zoning official, comma, stating, as written in the Horsley-Witten Group memorandum dated June 9th, 2022, in quotations, long-standing opinion of the town's zoning official and the town attorney that the definition of dwelling, again in quotations, covers all rentals no matter the length of stay. Therefore, STRs are currently an unregulated allowed use, period, end quote. In paragraph 13 of the decision, which we believe is arbitrary and capricious, it finds that the carefully crafted request using a direct quote was merely descriptive in nature and easily understood as a means to draw the respondent's attention to a particular topic, a broad topic, the regulation of STRs, not the exact search terms. We find it arbitrary and capricious because the finding entirely disregards the fact that Attorney McCousher's request specifically articulates that he's seeking all documents stating something specific, and then he puts it in quotes. The word stating, in our opinion, cannot be disregarded, and the word longstanding can't be disregarded. The decision looks to the Perkins versus FOIC case, Connecticut Supreme Court case, for the premise that members of the public should not be denied access to public requests simply because of an arguable imperfection in form in which the request is couched. And I submit that the request in this matter, you know, was framed in a form and was properly responded to by the respondents in its form. It was quite sophisticated, it was quite specific, and the hearing officer in the matter improperly rewrote or expanded the request in such a manner that was unfavorable and prejudicial to the respondents. You know, in our opinion, the hearing officer took great liberty in aligning the facts of this case with Perkins. This wasn't a simple oversight where they used cases citing Perkins and Perkins itself where they, you know, might not, it was a lay person and they might have used the words personal versus personnel or some minor, you know, imperfection that, and we were looking at it too narrowly. In her attempt to broaden the requested issue in paragraph 18, the hearing examiner attempts to simplify the request as requiring only that two conditions be met. However, in doing so, it effectively obliterates the word longstanding from the request in order to eliminate discretion defined against the respondent's argument under the Wilden case. Longstanding, which is a word used not only in the initial request, but again in May, the evidence of record in a May 10th, I believe, email from Attorney McCousher. He breaks it down looking for the long-standing opinion of the town attorney and the long-standing opinion of the building official. Long-standing is defined by Webster-Merriam as being of a long duration. When you, if you rewrite the request as the hearing examiner did, now you're working into what was once a quite specific and easily, something we can easily respond to. You now, you know, created an improper request that requires, you know, us to exercise discretion in determining whether certain records are responsive or not. I think in paragraph 2 of the decision, she even purports to provide the more broad version of the same by using respondents' May 10th email where they, you know, they continue to maintain the word long held as part of the request. Respondents maintain their position as articulated in the brief that was submitted, that the hearings officer's expansion and rewriting of the request requires now the respondents to exercise discretion. And as we stated, in Wilden, that would require us to conduct research. Finally, the hearing officer's findings with respect to the responsiveness of records produced for in-camera review is an error. That request seeks records of, which we have said the request seeks records of a longstanding, long-held opinion, and even by a stretch of an imagination, a small group of records that found that related generally to what she believes is the expanded version of the request. In our position, they are, even in, if we're to exercise our discretion, they're not of the same, they don't fall within the nature of the request. Furthermore, the proposed decision erroneously and arbitrarily applies the law and standard articulated in the Berlin case noted in the proposed decision with respect to comments that Attorney Rich Cody, comments of Attorney Rich Cody that are contained in meeting minutes of a June 15th, 2022 PNC or PZC meeting. And in that situation, the way that the hearing examiner applied the law and the standard to the facts in the manner is highly prejudicial to the respondent's attorney-client privilege. Essentially, the hearing officer in this case, similar to the officer in the Berlin case that was up on appeal, she cited to, is essentially still applying the quote-unquote gist standard that the court said leads to an unwarranted loss of privilege. The hearing officer, in this case, in our opinion, failed to correctly apply the standard of Berlin, which is the actually disclosed standard to the records, and is ordering disclosure of protected privileged communication. Noting nothing that the hearing officer is ordering to be produced amounts to communication from a P&Z official of the town, of a town practice, the P&Z's official feeling of the STR falling under a definition, which is what the meeting minutes reflected. Attorney Cody reflect, information that he had that the building officials feelings of are such, and the decision simply eviscerates the town's attorney-client privilege unjustly based on comments that were pretty specific at the PNZ meeting. We could certainly go through paragraph by paragraph of what we think are mischaracterizations, but I think overall the hearing examiner, unfortunately, got it wrong in this case.
Thank you. Yes, I think the hearing officer got it right for the most part. And well, the objections we're hearing today are the same objections we've been hearing throughout, which really are more based on the unwillingness of the town of Groton to provide the documents which we requested, which have to do with the opinion which is stated in a memo which was presented to our town council that short-term rentals are allowed uses in the town of Groton. I used the exact language in the memo that was presented to the council, long-standing opinion of, that was simply a quote of what was presented to our town council. And what's happening is that in an affidavit, our town manager, took hold of the word longstanding to justify not providing emails to us that contain that opinion that were provided by the town attorney to town officials. We don't know because we haven't seen the in-camera documents. But that, to me, is it's a spurious ground. It's attempting to limit the obligation of the town to provide documents. In the case of the town manager's affidavit, there were two emails in 2022 that he said he did not present because they were not long-standing, as if there's a certain vintage of information that they don't have to present, given that I asked for long-standing. Long-standing doesn't mean that this is some ancient doctrine or some long-held, but the fact is it's still the opinion and still the position of the town. And so the fact that they've had this opinion for a long time doesn't mean that any statements of it recently are somehow exempt. That's what they're trying to do, is trying to like seize on that word to somehow justify withholding these records. I call it pettifogging. It's spurious. It's not a valid reason to deny us these records, which the hearing officer found were due us because the town has waived any attorney-client privilege in this matter, having, you know, I believe also in the memo that was presented to the council that states this is the town position. The hearing officer found that that was inadvertently presented to the town council. I would take issue with it, but I don't think it's important because the hearing officer did find that any attorney-client privilege has been waived, and that includes statements by a town attorney, Attorney Cody, to our Planning and Zoning Commission, stating what the town's position is, that short-term rentals are not regulated, they're essentially allowed, they're non-conforming uses. We just, you know, what I've been looking for is I want to see what is the source of this opinion, you know, and I think why we have been unable to get this is because the town has been stating this is the town's position, but they never did any legal research to come to that conclusion, at least as far as I know. And I think they do not want us to have access to whatever statements of that opinion there are that are bereft of any actual legal analysis. I think that's why they're, you know, resisting this to the extent that they have. So there's no reason we shouldn't get this. Now, one of the disadvantages we have, we don't know what records were presented in camera. There have been some distinctions made in the opinion between documents that we're entitled to in paragraph 50, and then there are some that we're not entitled to under 51. I can't really argue whether those are valid or not. The hearing officer has determined that some do not are not based on the particular issue or words that, you know, would be responsive to our claim. But however, you know, we've been trying to get this for over a year. I asked for it in January. I was provided nothing and told that that was all there was. And even at the final hearing, the hearing we had on this, at one point the respondent said, well, there are no documents at all. You know, we don't have any documents. And then you can see from the in-camera list that there are documents, obviously. So this has been very evasive and I think desperate. I did want to point out there's a little bit of, you know, I don't know if confusion is the right word, but in paragraph 50 and 51, the documents that were provided in an index by the town, which are listed in paragraph 5, there's a little bit of, I don't know if it's clerical or otherwise, in on page 5, on line K, they listed things by alphabetically. K, it says lines 178 to 180. These are references to the documents that have been produced, which we haven't seen. And then it actually overlooks on the index that was provided, there was a line, a number listing line 185. It's not in paragraph 5. Now, going to paragraph 50, which orders which lines would be disclosed, it does mention line 185 as something that should be disclosed, but it doesn't Also, it says lines 178 and 185 can be disclosed, but in the list, it's listed as 178 to 180. Line 180 is not mentioned in paragraph 50 or 51, so I don't know if it was intended that, say, in paragraph 50, it was supposed to be 178 to 180 and 185, or whether it was intended that 180 not be disclosed. So I just bring this up as something that is unclear, you know, from which documents are supposed to be produced. Also, in the list of documents on page 2, there's a line 42. That's not mentioned in either the paragraph 50 for disclosure or paragraph 51 to be exempt. So, again, that's just been overlooked or maybe a clerical issue. In addition, page 2, line 60, is not in either paragraph 50 or 51. So, again, I don't know if it's supposed to be disclosed or not. So I thought I'd just point these out. There may be some, you know, clerical or housekeeping work that needs to be done to address those. But we're anxious to get these documents. We don't know what they are. We're hoping that they'll be useful to us. But it's been a very long road trying to get these. And I can't say why we're not getting them, but I can only speculate that there's something that the town does not want us to know. Thank you.
Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
Could I, for the record, I just respond to a couple of points that Attorney McCoucher made? He made reference that at a hearing we said that there are no documents, and suddenly then we produced a document. So for clarification purposes, we've always maintained that the records that were produced in camera are not responsive. And so any representation to the existing, that there are not documents, is that there are no documents we believe are responsive to the request. We didn't suddenly just find documents. It's that we've always felt that the records that we did produce in camera at the order of the hearing officer, they're not responsive. When you look at the request that was made, they are not responsive. They're not documents stating what the requesters were looking for. Furthermore, I just on the other point, he said that the attorneys waived privilege. I want to make very clear that the P&Z meeting minutes that the hearing officer is relying on as claiming that the town waived the privilege. Those meeting minutes, again, they're written. They say Attorney Cody reiterated that a practice of the town is that STRs are not regulated from, and then it went on. From what I've heard from the building official, he's measuring it against the definition of a dwelling unit. Currently, his feeling is that the STR falls under the definition of dwelling unit and they cannot be prohibited. For those meeting minutes to result in a waiver of attorney-client privilege of communication about STRs generally, is a stretch. And I think that the application of the Berlin Public Schools, which requires that the waiver applies only to particular matters actually disclosed, is erroneous in this case, because the only thing that we can be, potentially be ordered to disclose is something that is actually disclosed in those notes, in that snippet of Attorney Cody reiterating what he's heard from the building official about the practice of the town.
Thank you. Could I just state that there were two versions of this memo that I referenced. There was one presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission at the meeting that was just discussed, and it essentially says the same thing as the one that I said was presented to the council, that short-term rentals are an allowed use. That's the town's position. I just want to know, what is it based on? That's why we're seeking these records.
Any questions from any of the commissioners?
Hear from me as the hearing officer on this. And also I want to point out that Attorney Samara was most helpful in assisting with the drafting of this case. I want to give him credit, and he might be able to help with the clerical or otherwise issues that you mentioned regarding the in-camera, so we'll look at that. But I would just say that from the outset, this case to me was disappointing, and I would kind of point you to paragraph 7, where Attorney Cody's initial response to the request was to not say, I've looked for records, there aren't any records. He simply, he doesn't affirm or deny that there are any, and he just says, if there were, they'd be privileged, which I found very frustrating. And maybe at the hearing, a little bit of my frustration came out, because I felt that kind of led us down this path where we were at the hearing, which was, in my view, quite circular. I couldn't get at whether there were any records. We spent a lot of time focusing on this exact quote that was in the initial request, referencing, really the quote to me was quoting from this memo that the complainants had seen. So they said, we'd like any records of the stating the longstanding opinion of the town's zoning official. But that was the quote that was simply taken from that memo. And I thought that was, descriptive in nature, records reflecting that longstanding opinion, not records that say, this is our longstanding opinion. Here it is. So I thought that was just extremely narrow, and then combined with, the initial response just saying if we had any, they would be privileged. And to me, that's not really an answer. Also, Attorney Cody wasn't present at the hearing. The responses were represented by Attorney Kelly. I was just trying to get to the bottom of it. I asked for an affidavit from Attorney Cody, and I was given what I thought were very conflicting responses, saying that he couldn't possibly testify relative to a client, but then also saying he was a stranger to the proceedings. So I just felt that it was just very circular and, as I said, frustrating. So we wound up with a lot of process. You'll see this is a 10-page report involving affidavits and requests for in-camera. I thought just a search for the truth, or just get an answer for the complainants. We did ultimately go through in-camera records, really with an eye to protecting anything we thought hadn't been disclosed in those minutes. And I think, I could be wrong, but I think it was the respondents, Attorney Kelly potentially, at the hearing that kind of directed me toward those minutes, saying that the opinion was stated at a public meeting. So that's what, as we were looking at this, that's what led us down the path of, well, let's see what was in the minutes. And when we got those in camera, comparing the in camera against the minutes, and you'll see that we did go through the in-camera records. We found a couple of items were not, in our view, responsive. And also with an eye toward protecting any possible privilege, we allowed for the redaction of some of the records. There's not a lot. I welcome the commission to, take a look at them if you'd like, but just did want to speak to that frustration. And it was, a little bit disappointing to me too, as this was Attorney Samaro's, like, one of his very first cases that he was assisting at a hearing. So that's why this comes out the way it did, and why there are so many words for something that's, in my view, kind of a small issue.
Do any of the commissioners have any questions? Thank you. All right, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I'll move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion?
I wasn't clear on if there were any clerical errors with the numbers that were mentioned before we approved it.
Yeah, so I don't have, this is trying to spot off on the record. I don't have the in-camera index here. I was going to go over to our in-camera record room to see if I can pull that just to double check. if something was missing, it might just be.
You want us to take a break? Everyone's going to take a break and then another. Would you like to do that?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Did we do that right now?
Yeah.
Just take a 5 minute break?
Sure.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Items in the in camera index.